Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Steelers Football. I'm Bob Labriola, joined as always by Mike Pursuta of the DVE Morning Show. I guess we should tell the listeners that we broke protocol before we started taping this. We did some research.
A little bit,
yes.
Word out of the locker room this week has been you're supposed to amp it up a little bit.
A little focus.
A little bit more. No panic, but just a little bit more devotion to detail. So we're following suit.
Looking back on the rich history of the Steelers Cowboys all-time series, you know, these teams have played in three Super Bowls. The Steelers won two, the Cowboys won one. And Mike, you posed the question of, has there been any other two teams in NFL history that have met each other in multiple Super Bowls and split?
Or at least each win one.
And go ahead, you look.
We came up with the Washington Redskins and the Miami Dolphins, and that is it.
Yes,
they're 1-1 against each other in Lombardi Trophy games. And I've had that kind of bouncing around my head all week because it struck me as we're preparing for this, Labs, that both the Steelers and Cowboys are 7-6. The Steelers right now are in the playoffs barely. The Cowboys right now are out of the playoffs barely. They both have a lot of work to do to resolve their season. So all the historical, romantic, mystical stuff is kind of, if not on the back burner, it's on the back shelf to be taken out at some other juncture. And it's kind of a shame because these are two storied franchises and rich histories and, you know, as recognizable as any, I think, in the NFL. Who didn't watch a million Cowboys games growing up?
You really had no choice. I mean, based on, you know, before, you know, DirecTV and NFL ticket and stuff, you got the games that, you know, were broadcast either in your area or that the networks picked to show nationally. And Dallas was a great pick for, at the time, it was CBS because CBS had the NFC. This was before it went to Fox even, and NBC was the AFC. So, you know, for CBS picking the Cowboys, you got a great viewership from people who liked the Cowboys and a great viewership from people who hated them and just wanted to see bad things happen to them.
Yeah, they're one of those polarizing teams.
Yeah, like
the
Notre
Steelers,
Dame.
They're one of those teams that has a fan base that extends far beyond the region, the home region. And, yeah, imagine there's some people out there that hate the Steelers, too.
Yeah, but the Cowboys at that time
were
very much hated.
The football Yankees,
yes.
Notre Dame, you were saying a minute ago. Yeah, so that's – I've never been a Cowboys fan per se, but I really appreciate what they've been.
And
kind of the whole everything's bigger in Texas. We're going to get the cheerleaders first. We're going to have the big stadium. The star logo, I think, is really arrogant in a cool kind of way.
I like the Cowboys back in the 60s, the Don Meredith, when they were the kind of the up-and-coming team. But then once they started winning, you had to hate them.
Yeah. You know, when Ditka played for them, we had to root for them.
No, we didn't. Oh, in your house. Okay. I understand that.
Yeah, Mom and Dad were all Quipa graduates.
Right. He is the ultimate
Quip.
Quip, yes. Okay.
He isn't he?
Well, I mean, kind of, you know, I'm always of the belief that you have to take your hat off and hand it to somebody, as Heinz Ward would say, who invents something, who is the first, the pioneer, the first person to whatever. Neil Armstrong on the moon, Thomas Edison with the light bulb. Ditka was the first Aliquippa guy who was great. I mean, great in terms of, you know, taking it beyond the boundaries of that little town.
Which a lot of people from Aliquippa have no interest even in doing.
And, you know, he personified, you know, not only the era of football in this area, but also what that region was. If you were from there.
Hardworking, down to earth.
Yeah.
Keep your nose to the grindstone.
Yeah. No excuses.
Take your medicine when you have to.
You know, if you come up to a problem, you show it the back of your hand and move on. He kind of.
I like that description.
Show it the back of your hand.
No, the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
Everything that you just said there.
Let's jump now into the 2012 version of this. To me, if you would ask me, what do you hope the Steelers accomplish in this game? Number one thing, I would say to exercise some control over DeMarcus Ware and Anthony Spencer. In terms of matchups, what the Steelers need to get accomplished on this field, to me, if they cannot control those guys, I don't think the offense can score enough points to handle what Dallas is going to do offensively. With against the Steelers defense playing without Ike Taylor, and as of this taping, you figure to have Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown, but at what level of physical health and effectiveness, we don't know. And let's be honest, even if they're 100% healthy, they're still guys who are on the come as opposed to established NFL starters. So I just think that Dallas, there's going to be some scoring in this game. It wouldn't surprise me at all. 27 to 30 points are going to be necessary to win.
Yeah, we're on the same page. The question you posed, what do you want to most see? I was going to say the offensive line functioned well as a unit. You know, we saw that at midseason for a while, and then the injuries started piling up, and it's been back to, you know, what the Steelers have been working around for seemingly a lot of seasons now. I'm pretty eager to see what David DeCastro brings to the mix. But more than that, you want to see them function. You mentioned pass protection against great pass rushers. One way to do that is to run the ball well and keep them at least thinking fleetingly about the run. One of the worst aspects of that San Diego game to me was 2 third-and-1s and 1 fourth-and-1 didn't get done. And that's not championship stuff. So I want to see how this unit plays. It looks like it's going to wind up being Max Starks, Ramon Foster, Marquise Pouncey, David DeCastro, and Kelvin Beach. And let's see what that unit potentially can do.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that, you know, I'm not happy that Willie Colon had or needed knee surgery. However, I think it will help the group only in the sense that they know he's not playing.
It needs to stabilize, is what you're
yes.
saying.
Yes. The lineup, the who's in, who's out, needs to stabilize now for the next few weeks, and hopefully there's more than that after that.
For the rest of them, yeah.
And because a lot of it, you know, again, we talk about this, the coordination, the, you know, being in sync, the rhythm, whatever, that has to redevelop. And having a guy who's maybe going to play, maybe not, try to play but can't practice, practice a couple of days in a week, and then he has a flare-up and then he can't play. That's just the kind of turmoil that I don't think you need at this particular time. So hopefully these five that you mentioned are able to line up and, you know, play somewhat effectively so that there don't need to be any changes made for performance. And then if everybody can stay healthy, you know, maybe you got a shot.
Yeah, this will be their seventh different combination starting five. And for the first 5-6 weeks, maybe a little longer, it was one.
Yeah.
And it's been,
and it was starting to come, too.
Right. And now it's been seemingly a different one every week, and now you're back to can't make 3rd-and-1.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just enough time, I think, to solidify it, stabilize it, get it cranked up for the playoffs, and then see where you can go with it.
Looking at the Dallas offense, where we are right now, Dez Bryant has been told to have surgery on his finger by the orthopedic surgeons that he has seen. Boy, there's a shocker. Orthopedic surgeons advocating surgery. That just shocks me. But anyway, he said he's going to try and play. You know, we'll see if that actually ends up happening, and if it does, how effective he is. Dez Bryant, though, already a 1,000-yard receiver, 9 touchdowns. Having him in the lineup at full strength would certainly be a big problem for the Steelers, especially without Ike Taylor. I would imagine it would have been Ike all over Dez Bryant if that had been possible.
And that's one I would have liked to have seen, because Dez Bryant, those numbers you just read speak for themselves. And if you've seen the guy play well, it's jaw-dropping when he's on his game. But this guy is a real enigma.
Right.
I've seen him catch a pass and step out of bounds willingly 1 yard shy of a first down.
On fourth down.
I've seen him melt down on the sidelines. I've seen him run the wrong route and hang his quarterback. You know, one of the reasons Tony Romo has as many interceptions as he does is Dez Bryant isn't where he's supposed to be a lot of the time. But when he's feeling it and when he's playing well, he's as good as there is. Not consistently, not from series to series, not even from down to down probably. But when it's working, it works well. So they need him, the Cowboys do. And if he's out there, the Steelers need to do what they can to frustrate him and maybe see if they can't convince that other Dez Bryant to come out and maybe start screaming at his quarterback.
And, you know, one of the – you're talking about Dez Bryant and the stuff that he does when he's on. This obviously didn't count.
The Giants game.
Oh, what a
– best catch of the season, huh?
I mean, really. And
was he out by a knuckle?
Yeah.
And that's just a natural –
yeah, a natural thing. I mean, you'd put your hand down.
Seconds to play, 40 yards away, and you're going to win the game like that. That was that close. Yeah, I'm right there with you. That was spectacular.
You mentioned also the Steelers running attack. The Cowboys running attack has been below the line, at least below the line that they had originally set for themselves. And that's some injuries to both of their backs. DeMarco Murray hasn't played the entire season, nor has Felix Jones. But also neither one of those guys is averaging even over 4 yards a carry. So, you know, the Cowboys are going to live and die with Romo. And I think the Steelers have the potential to have their running game be more of a factor in the game. But I still think, you know, when this game is over, we're going to look at the two quarterbacks, figure out who played better, and that'll probably be the guy on the winning team.
And that might be decided by whether or not the Steelers' defensive backs catch the ball.
Yes.
Because Tony Romo's going to throw it to him. He's another guy. He's going to make some marvelous throws. This guy takes a lot of heat. He gets a lot of criticism. I know he hasn't had playoff success. It's not only the quarterback who's responsible for that. And they've had some issues down there throughout his career. But he also creates some for himself. If you get him running around, if you get him under extreme pressure, he's not apt to just throwing it down the middle of the field and, hey, let's see what happens. He likes that little, I'm running away, let me throw a backhand, little shovel job. And if my running back or whoever's out there is paying attention, maybe we get a big play out of it. Or maybe I throw it to the defensive tackle by mistake or some other bad thing happens. I don't want to say he's mistake-prone, but he will make mistakes. And you got to take advantage. The Bengals had their hands, Bob, on three of his passes last week. A couple of them right to the defensive back. All you got to do is catch it. They failed every time. If they get one interception, they probably win that game.
And the other thing about Romo is he is predictable. In situations, as you mentioned, feeling pressure or sensing pressure, and we saw that in 08 at Heinz Field. He went to Witten, didn't see Deshae Townsend standing right there, pick six, ball game. I agree with you. The Steelers come into this game pretty bad in terms of interceptions, but the team they will be playing is the worst. Dallas is 32nd in the league in interceptions. But, you know, Curtis Brown, Cortez Allen, Josh Victorian, DeMarcus Van Dyke, Ryan Clark, Troy Polamalu, who's ever in there, Will Allen.
Got to catch it.
Catch the ball.
Got to catch it.
Catch the ball.
You know, you mentioned Witten. I think he had an 18-catch game this year.
Yeah, wasn't that against the Ravens?
I believe against the Giants.
Oh, that's right, the Giants. And they still lost, yeah.
That was the Dez Bryant game. But that – you talked about Romo being predictable. He's not above, hey, this is working.
Oh, yeah.
Let's keep doing it.
Yeah.
There's good predictable, too. And they're not necessarily trying to show you how smart their offensive coordinator is, who happens to also be their head coach, at least their play caller. They're trying to move the sticks and score points. And they'll do what they think is working.
Yeah, and like I said, though, in that instance – Romo to Witten was working. He was open. But he will also go there just because that's what you do.
Yes.
That's what he does on those down and distance situations. So if you can kind of anticipate that, bait him, so to speak, you know, maybe you come up with something.
DeMarcus Ware is really good.
Cool.
To get back to your initial point. And it was funny watching the game last week against the Bengals. They had a couple injuries in the defensive backfield. Claiborne, the one starting quarterback, was banged up. One of the safeties was banged up in and out of the game. They were playing some relatively inexperienced guys. So they did a lot of dropping eight and rushing three. And they got a sack to close the game. I think it was Spencer on a four-man rush. Not close the game, but get the ball back from Cincinnati to set up their field goal possession that won the game. And DeMarcus Ware did a lot of dropping, and he got a sack on a three-man rush.
Oh, yeah, three-man rush includes one of those guys or both of those guys. Don't underestimate it.
Yeah.
Spencer is more of a strength and power guy. DeMarcus Ware, really, if you had to ask me to pick someone in the league at this time, if my life depended on getting a sack on this next play, he's my first pick.
Yeah, the one thing I've seen from this guy is he doesn't give up on the play. He might get pushed out or run past it, or the quarterback might bolt the pocket and start running to the other sideline. He's going to keep chasing. He's going to keep coming. He apparently really likes getting these sacks.
Yeah, he's pretty good at it too. So I've decided unilaterally that I am out of the prediction business after last week. So I'm not going to say what I think because just to be honest.
Well, you said the quarterback that plays better.
I said that's – well, but that's not – I don't know who that's going to be.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
It's less than Nostradamus-like.
Yes, very much less than Nostradamus-like. Plus, I don't know what to expect from the Steelers. I have an inkling that they're going to play well only because they were so awful against the Chargers. But I don't know that that translates into a victory or not either.
I'll say this. I've been interested in how they responded this week, and it is the polar opposite of how I'm sensing Steeler Nation is responding. There's a lot of calm. There's a lot of quiet confidence in the face of evidence to the contrary. There's a lot of emphasizing, hey, you know, we're still number six. It's not where we want to be, but we still have a lot to play for, a lot to achieve. There's been a lot of we don't panic around here. There's been a lot of knee-jerk reactions, don't solve anything. You've got to dig in and keep going. It's been a calm, quiet poise about the players this week. And who knows, maybe they should be panicking. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how fervent they seem to have maintained a belief in themselves and their process.
Well, to paraphrase a former coach here, there's a fine line between urgency and panic. And, you know, we'll see if how they walk it the rest of this week in preparation, and then
talking it pretty well, I think.
Well, yeah, and that's really kind of what you would hope that you would get, because panicking is you know, as I said, urgency. Let's go for urgency. Okay, 4:25 p.m. Eastern time Sunday, Pittsburgh at Dallas in the house that Jerry built. Be there or be square. For Mike Prasuta, I'm Bob Labriola. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Monday when we tell you how right we were about this game.
Well, we're not going to be wrong because neither one of us is calling it.
Neither one of us has any idea. Talk to you then.